Welcome to my IELTS classroom, the podcast where two English experts talk all things IELTS. I'm Shelley Cornick.
And I'm Nick Long.
And today we are looking at a little trick that IELTS uses in the listening exam. What are the usual tricks that IELTS uses? How can you avoid them? And what is this new trick that we have noticed? Good evening, Nick. How are you?
Good evening. I'm all right. Thank you very much. How's it going?
It's not too bad. Weather's good here in England.
Oh, nice.
I don't know what else to say. Went to see a little musical performance at the weekend at the local theatre.
Oh, very nice.
Which was actually really good.
Yeah.
It was student, so I thought it was going to be a little bit dodgy, but actually felt like I was at the West End
in Lincoln.
Tiny theatre in Lincoln, so that was pretty good. How about you? What have you been up to?
We went away for our anniversary this weekend.
Did you? Where'd you go?
We went to a small village in the north of Latvia.
Yeah.
And we just rented a country house, had a barbecue, had some wine, had some beer, and then the next day we walked to the beach, which was 4 kilometres away.
Right.
And back again. So we did like 15,000 steps. About 3 hours.
Okay, yeah. Poor Charlie must have been exhausted by the
he
end of that.
He was absolutely dead when we got back. he slept the whole evening, actually, when we got home.
Did he?
Yeah.
Bless him. Is there much coastline in Latvia?
It's like half the country, yeah.
Is it? Because you often say you go to the beach, and I can't picture it in my head. Like, how far is it?
The whole left-hand side of the country's on the coast.
Right, okay.
Yeah. It's lovely. Hardly any people.
I always imagine it's
natural.
A bit like Australia, sort of like more land than people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Lovely. Okay, well, that's all very nice. I hope everybody listening has also had a nice week. Today, Nick, I reckon we're going to do a kind of deep dive.
Ooh.
Because we sort of often in the podcast look at, I don't know, a specific element of speaking or listening or reading, but we tend to look at questions, right? Mm-hmm. So we do a question down approach. So we'll take a, you know, I don't know, a headings match reading question and look at how you approach it, the different skills, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I just want to draw people's attention to something which actually we have touched on in the podcast, but I mean, if anybody can remember that, they must have an incredible memory, because it was like 5 or 6 sentences in an episode I think we did about 2 years ago about box matching for listening, right? So I kind of understood that there was this trick that IELTS often uses in the listening then, but more and more recently, as I've been doing sort of new tests, I keep seeing it appear again and again and again. So I thought it might be a good idea just to dedicate a full episode to this mysterious trick, which I keep referring to, all right? But before we do that, you teach the intensive listening course, Nick, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, and the live lessons, and so do I. So in our course, we sort of focus a lot on multiple choice questions, and I guess box matching questions and multiple, multiple choice questions. So let's just remind our listeners, in general, you know, when you go into the listening exam, IELTS kind of use the same tricks over and over again, don't they, to try and get you to choose the wrong answer.
They do.
So, you know, if we're thinking about part one, for example, the nice slow conversation between two people, what sort of things should students expect to see in that part of the test that might trick them into choosing the wrong answer?
Well, they're definitely going to hear plausible answers as one of them.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So what does that mean?
So if someone's describing the colour of something, then they might say 3 different colours, and you have to listen carefully to the context and choose the correct one.
Absolutely. I think that is pretty much the main trick
isn't it,
in part one. When you get into parts 2 and 3, and then we've got, you know, multiple choice, or we're trying to match things from a box, what do IELTS tend to do then? I guess there are a couple of other common tricks that they use.
Well, for the multiple choice questions, you'll usually hear all 3 of the answers referenced.
Yeah.
And again, you just have to listen carefully to the context of what's being said before you make your choice.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's the main thing, is that they just, as you said, like, they'll throw keywords from all the possible answers at you.
Yeah.
And if you're just listening for those keywords, very likely you're going to choose the wrong answer, because usually mm-hmm. if there's a word that you can read and mm-hmm. you hear it, it's not the answer. Correct answer. Yeah. Now, they do actually sometimes use a keyword in the answer to stop students just never choosing those answers. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. most of the time, yeah, that would be it. Can you think of any other sort of general thing that's happening?
Well, synonyms yeah. are a big part, aren't they, of part yeah. two and part three?
Definitely. I think, I mean, it kind of goes hand in hand. If you're not mm-hmm. listening for keywords, isn't it? Mm-hmm. What are you listening for? It's paraphrasing, it's meaning.
Meaning is the key thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Some other sort of useful tricks that you can use for, you know, for box matching and for multiple choices, eliminating incorrect yeah, answers, definitely. Isn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah.
They often, as you said, they often go through the three options in multiple choice, mm-hmm. but they'll tell you that one or two of them
are wrong.
Are definitely wrong, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, eliminating what's not correct can be good. I had another thing in my head then. What was it? Oh, the other thing that, maybe this is not a trick, but very often IELTS will use a key word in the question. So it might be, I don't know, if you've got a multiple choice, you've got to listen for what two things does the kitchen supervisor says makes new employees stressed.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll discuss all of them, but you've got to focus on the ones that make them mm-hmm. stressed. Or in multiple yeah. choice, it might be what stood on Park Road previously.
Mm-hmm.
So that previously is the key word. It's not now, it's not in the future, but in the past. In the past,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So IELTS are always using these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. Just to, when I say trick you, I don't suppose it's really to trick you so much as to really test that you actually understand the conversation.
Yeah. And that you're listening carefully and
yeah.
that you've actually understood the question as well, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm a bit guilty sometimes of using words like IELTS trickery. And actually, what they're really doing is employing very good test writing skills. Mm. It was quite interesting what day is it today? Monday. When did that happen then? Oh, Friday. Crikey, I've lost track of time. On Friday, we did, as part of our live lessons, a full mm-hmm. practice test.
Mm.
So the students came and we just, you know, there was no teaching. It was just press play. Let's test where you are. Mm-hmm. And I'd done the test before. And so I used my old computer to sort of set up the listening.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that happening on my computer. And then while that was happening, I was just marking to sort of try and multitask. And it was really interesting because I had my headphones on and I was listening to the listening text.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of half looking at the questions. To be honest, I was being a bit cocky, Nick, because I was thinking, oh, yeah, I've done this before and I know IELTS really well. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of interesting how for some of the questions, even in part two, the multiple choice,
mm-hmm.
if you don't listen carefully, you can easily
yep.
not get the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously I understood all of the words, but mm-hmm. because I wasn't really focusing on the questions.
Paying attention.
Yeah, you really do have to pay attention, right? So I do think that IELTS listening, even if you're able to listen to Nick and I speak every week and do the washing up, it is a completely different skill to be able to sort of listen and find the right answers, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
But what I want to talk about today then is another, and I think this is actually a trick. I think some of the other things that IELTS does, like use paraphrase, use keywords,
mm-hmm.
that's all kind of cool. But I've noticed recently they do something I might call a little bit dirty. Oh. Okay. And that is using, I'm going to call it opposite language.
Mm.
So let's imagine you had a friend, Nick, who mm-hmm. always told you everything, but only ever using opposite language. So by that, I would mean if you asked your friend, were you early this morning?
Mm-hmm.
They would say, well, I wasn't late.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ask them, how do you feel today? They might say, well, instead of saying I'm healthy, they might say, well, I'm not sick, right? Mm-hmm. So using IELTS, I've noticed, when they're using paraphrasing, right, we know that they're not going to use the same words.
Yeah.
What they tend to do is they try and play mm-hmm. on these opposites.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about opposites is that our brains, I think, you know, if I hear the word sick,
mm-hmm.
my brain kind of automatically goes to sick.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I hear the negative, I almost have to double think.
Yeah.
And go, wait a minute, not healthy. Sick. Yeah, mm-hmm. not sick. That means healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these double, I don't know what to even call them, like negative, these negative plays with the negatives can honestly make me, I'm sitting there going, I know what they said. I know what I can read. Do they have the same meaning? It could be quite difficult, particularly, you know, in a multiple choice, when you're listening to lots and lots of options, it could be hard to choose the right option when you've got an opposite. So I thought what we'd do today is I've gone through, I mean, it was quite a lot of work. I've gone through 6 or 7 tests and I've chosen just 6 or 7 questions, which just show how IELTS uses these opposites. Because it is, I'm not saying it's every test, but it is pretty frequently. So let's start with a multiple choice example. All right. So I can't remember which Cambridge book this is from. All of the examples today are from the Cambridge book. I think it's a pretty recent one. I reckon it's 15 or later. And it is the multiple choice questions where they're discussing mammoths. You know, there's, I think we've had some mammoth questions on the podcast before, actually, right? So I can't remember what they're called. Oh, yeah, Rosie. And then there's a guy talking to their tutor about this presentation that they're going to do about woolly mammoths, which are those old elephants that had lots of hair that are dead now. So for this first question, what we're supposed to be listening for is what was surprising about the mammoth tooth found by Russell Graham, right? So we need to focus on what's surprising. So obviously, you know, before we even have the trick of the opposites, we're already in part three here listening for an emotion.
Yeah.
So Nick, if it says what is surprising, what should, what type of language should the students really be focusing on while they listen?
Well, we might hear an exclamation.
Right. Like something what would that be?
Oh, I had no idea. Can you believe that? That's crazy.
Could have knocked me down with a feather.
Or we might hear inversion.
Right.
Mm. Not only did we find this, but we also found this.
Oh, that could be good to show surprise. I couldn't believe it. Yeah, you definitely want to hear, I reckon, listen for some sort of exclamation that this thing was not expected. So it might, you know, and the intonation of their voice might help you, right?
It's going to go up. Probably.
It's going to go, because when we're surprised, we're like, no, really? I know. I couldn't believe it. So we're definitely already focusing on listening for some language of surprise, right? So as you listen, I'm going to ask everyone, I'm not going to tell you what the three options are, okay? I just want people listening to do two things. Number one, I want you to just write down word for word what they tell us was surprising.
Okay.
About the mammoth tooth. And so if you can do that, that's fantastic. And even better, what language signaled that they found that information surprising? What was the phrase you heard that signaled surprise? So we'll do two little things. But what I'm really interested in is what was surprising. So if you can remember that, particularly if you can remember word for word, that would be incredible. So Nick, are you ready? We'll just cue it. So it's just one question, okay? And what you are going to hear, the tutor and Rosie, the girl, speaking.
Then you're describing the discovery of the mammoth tooth on St. Paul's Island in Alaska and why it was significant.
Yes, the tooth was found by a man called Russell Graham. He picked it up from under a rock in a cave. He knew it was special. For a start, it was in really good condition, as if it had been just extracted from the animal's jawbone. Anyway, they found it was 6,500 years old.
So why was that significant?
Well, the mammoth bones previously found on the North American mainland were much less recent than that, so this was really amazing.
Then we're making an animated diagram to show that you...
Okay, so they did use the phrase special early, didn't they? They knew it was special. Do you remember what was special about it?
The age of it, the condition it was in.
Oh, right, yeah. Exactly. It was in good condition. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. there was no option of good condition.
All right.
In the multiple choice options, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess special is not necessarily what they found surprising. Mm-hmm. I think later, Rosie used a phrase that really said the sentence before she thought was surprising. Do you remember what the phrase was that she used?
I know she said 6,500 years old.
Yeah, she did. And then the tutor says, well, why was that significant? And then she gave us the answer and then said, so this was really amazing. Mm-hmm. So I guess that phrase, this was really amazing.
Is the surprising element, yeah.
Is the surprising element. But now, again, this is the problem. I think with IELTS listening, you need an incredible short-term memory. Because if you heard that's really amazing, but you can't remember what she said before that.
You're done. You're cooked.
The answer is gone, right? You're not going to get it. So mm-hmm. can you remember roughly what she said before it?
So they found it was 6,005 years old. It was in really good condition.
Yeah.
And she said something about the mammoth bones in that area were much older than that.
Right. And this is where I think it gets confusing, because what she said was, mm-hmm. you have summarized very well. Mm. Her actual words were, the mammoth bones previously found on the North American mainland were much less recent than that. Mm-hmm. So that is, honestly, a mental conundrum, I think, because it's saying the mammoth bones found before mm-hmm. were much less recent. So if they were much less recent, I guess that means that they were older, yeah? Actually, Nate, do you know what? I don't understand this question. If they were much less recent, doesn't that mean that they were older?
Yes, it means that.
Yes, it means that they were older.
Yeah.
The previous, let's call them original bones.
The original
right?
bones were older, of course, yeah. And it was not as old as mammoth remains from elsewhere.
Yes.
Is the answer. So yeah, wow, yeah, that's pretty.
One of the answers is that the tooth is not as old. Mm-hmm. So you've got to understand that the bones were much less recent, which mm-hmm. means that they were older, mm-hmm. and you've got to connect that mm-hmm. with the answer, it was not as old as. Mm-hmm. Do you not think that is a massive mental puzzle?
I mean, it is, but we also have to consider the other answers as well.
Right.
And I think that's probably where the clever students are going to get the correct answer, because the other two probably are not going to be mentioned at all or can be eliminated very easily.
I think you're absolutely right. The other two options are about it was still embedded in the mammoth jawbone. So it's about where the tooth was. Mm-hmm. The option B was it was from an unknown species of mammoth. So it's about the type of mammoth. Mm-hmm. I guess even if your brain is going, wait a minute, not as old as, much less recent, what you do understand is that what she thought was amazing was something about time.
Yes.
So C is the only option, which is about time.
That's about time. And A, actually, you can eliminate A before that, because she says as if it had just been extracted from the animal's jawbone.
And that's another... Now, we've looked at that in reading, actually. Mm-hmm. So when it says as if, mm-hmm. does that mean it had happened?
No.
No, it's like it had happened, but she's making a very nice comparison, mm-hmm. like a metaphor.
Yeah. Actually, B is not mentioned here anywhere. There's nothing about the species of... So yeah, very tricky, very, very tricky question. But I think the higher level students would see it's clearly not B. There's no reference to that whatsoever.
No.
And I think, yeah, there probably would be maybe a little bit tricky between A and C, depending on your level.
Definitely.
And like you said, whether it's about time or whether it's about the location of the bone.
Exactly.
So you have to connect it.
But as I said, I think this is a great introduction to the idea of they are using in the recording the word less recent, so you've got recent, and then on the paper it's not as old, so you've got two opposites, recent and old, but they've got the same meaning because they've been used in different ways.
Do you know what the worst thing about that question is?
What's that?
It's question 22. So if you spend 5 or 10 seconds thinking about it,
you're done for
question 23.
You're absolutely right. You've probably still got, you might have 23 and even like 24 left.
Mm-hmm.
That's only the third multiple choice. Yeah, you might have another 5 after that.
Yeah. Horrible.
Horrible. It is cruel. So let's do another one because that was our example. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's do another one, which, as I say, is a little bit easier because I think in this one, and what I want to show you is that sometimes IELTS gives you 2 bites of the same cherry.
Ooh,
that's a nice idiom. What does that mean, Nick, if you're getting 2 bites of the cherry?
It lets you have 2 attempts, basically, to get the correct answer.
Yes, right. They often will give you a really difficult way to get the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then a really simple way to get the answer. So you still, it doesn't matter which way you use to get the answer. Yes. And I'm guessing if you understand the difficult, you can also get the easy.
Yeah.
But in this one, so we're now listening, completely different listening now. We've moved on to a multiple choice, which is somebody's doing a presentation about the life and work of Thor Heyerdahl.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So... Oh, no, that's it. They're doing a presentation about Thor Heyerdahl. I think he's some dude who
built a boat.
Yeah, he sounds like a Viking. He built a boat and sailed thousands of miles and nobody really understands how he did it.
Mm.
So at this point of the discussion, we've got 2 students who are making a presentation about Thor.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the students has used a textbook by a man called William Oliver.
Mm.
All right. And what we need to listen for is the criticism that the speakers make of William Oliver's textbook. So what do the students not like about the textbook? So again, if we're looking for a criticism, Nick, what type of language should we be looking out for when we're trying to spot what the criticism is?
Negatives. I didn't like that. That wasn't interesting. This part wasn't very good.
Yes.
I wasn't
something
impressed.
That's, wasn't very useful. Maybe what could be wrong with textbooks? No pictures. It was boring. It was, you know, basically we're listening for what the problem is. So we'll listen again. I'm not going to tell you the 3 options.
Mm-hmm.
I just want you to tell me what do the speakers say is wrong with the textbook?
Okay.
And if you can write down just the words that tell you that, that would be fantastic.
Yes. Right, well, I'll prepare a PowerPoint slide at the end that acknowledges our sources. I mainly used The Life and Work of Thor Heyerdahl by William Oliver. I thought the research methods he used were very sound, although I must say I found the overall tone somewhat old-fashioned. I think they need to do a new, revised edition.
Yeah, I agree. What about the subject matter? I found it really challenging.
Well, it's a complex issue.
I thought the book had lots of good points. What did you think of the illustration?
So, sorry, I said Thor. His name's Thor. What did they dislike about William Oliver's book about Thor?
The Australian guy said that the work... It was very old-fashioned. The writing style was very old-fashioned.
Yes.
And there needs to be a revision.
Exactly. So can you see where we might be going with the 2 bites of the cherry?
So old-fashioned is going to be the difficult one.
Maybe it's the opposite.
Okay, and then there needs to be a revision.
Yeah.
I guess because, there should be or there needs to be. It's like...
We're talking about the future. So here... Option A for the multiple choice was its style is out of date.
Okay, yeah. So that is old-fashioned is the easy one, yeah.
Yeah, so they've definitely said the tone, which is the style, is old-fashioned. And then I think, just to make this a bit more difficult, that's when they say, I think they need to do a new revised edition. So they've used the word new and revised, but they said they need to do that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this particular option... is just out of date. So that is, I guess, a use of opposites, which I think is a bit easier than the first example that we
did.
But again, they're still sort of playing that same idea through. Let's see, let's test everyone at home then. Let's do a more difficult one, okay? Now, I think for this one, the only way we can really do this is to actually tell you what the options are before we start listening, okay? So, I will read. Well, actually, no, Nick, you can read it. I'll just do it so you can't see the answer because I'm being mean. Okay, so we are now, we're doing a listening now. Again, another multiple choice. It's a guy and a girl who are talking about a project or a module they have just completed on children's literature.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so they've spoken about different types of children's stories in different countries. And now they're about to talk about books or stories which are aimed at just boys or just girls. So do you want to read this question for us, Nick?
So question 25, it says, with regard to books aimed only at boys or only girls, Trevor was surprised.
Again.
Again, it's a surprise. So he was surprised, first of all, how long the distinction had gone unquestioned. He was surprised how few books were aimed at both girls and boys, or he was surprised how many children enjoyed books intended for the opposite sex.
Cool. So we've got quite a lot of how questions. We've got a how long, so a time one.
Mm-hmm.
How long the distinction between boys' books and girls' books went unquestioned.
Mm-hmm.
He was surprised how few books were aimed at both boys and girls, so not many for boys and girls, and how many children enjoyed books intended for the opposite sex. So how many girls liked the Beano. I don't know. how many boys like Bunty. They are old-fashioned comics in England. I might actually put this, if I get time this week to do, and if you're lucky and I have made a blog post, I will put this question because I do think that the confusion here is much stronger when you read it. Okay. So let's have a listen to this one then.
What about books for girls and books for boys? Does the course go into that?
Yes, there's a module on it. For years, lots of stories, in English at least, assumed that boys went out and did adventurous things and girls stayed at home and played with dolls. I was amazed how many books were targeted at just one sex or the other. Of course, this reflects society as it is when the books are written.
That's true. So, it sounds as though you think it's a good course.
Definitely.
Right. Interesting.
Very.
So, what is the correct answer?
It's B.
B.
Yeah.
So, the correct answer is how few books were aimed at both boys and girls.
Good.
How was that information given to us, though, Nick?
How many books were just targeted at boys or girls, I think he said. One sex
exactly
or the other,
what
sorry.
He said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So they have, this is probably the best example of the episode. Mm-hmm.
Complete opposite, yeah.
Complete opposite. So instead of saying how few, they've said how many.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's not both boys and girls, it's just one sex or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember listening to this, I understood what I heard and I understood what I read, but trying to understand if they were the same thing
took you a bit of time.
It's quite tricky.
Mm.
Yeah, it is tricky. So, you know, how many, how few,
mm-hmm.
that's a clear play on the opposites.
Mm-hmm.
That is so tricky, isn't it?
And actually they've got a couple of key words from that second answer, because how many children enjoyed books intended for the opposite sex. They've got how many, and they've also got opposite. Oh no, they've got one sex or the other, I guess, which...
But they've got sex, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you don't really understand what intended means, it does say targeted at, so...
Yeah, aimed at, targeted at. Mm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there's, I mean, that's almost like, if you just look for word paraphrases without the meaning of that sentence, C has got the whole set of paraphrase there, hasn't it?
Almost, yeah.
It would be so, so tempting to go for C.
Yeah, intended and targeted that. Yeah, that's right.
But I do think they love this, particularly words like more, less, many, few.
Mm-hmm.
Those seem to be the words that they sort of put in the washing machine to have the same meaning. Mm. Let's do one more. It's quite similar, actually. Okay. So this time we're listening to two students who are talking about a presentation mm-hmm. about biofuels.
Oh, wow.
Do you know what biofuels?
Biofuels are fuels that come from crops.
Yeah. Well, I don't really know much about them, to be honest. I just know that you can burn, like, is it true that some cars, I think a student from Brazil told me that they have some cars which are fueled by like corn oil or something.
Yeah,
or peanut
you can
oil.
Use oils. Like, it's big in Germany. They have lots of rapeseed oil in Germany. They grow like rapeseed's the biggest crop in Germany at the minute, and they can't eat it. They just use it for biofuels.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what we're listening for now is that the students are discussing. This is quite an easy one for us to do without the students being able to see the answers or like the possible answers. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a multiple choice. Mm-hmm. This time, we just need to identify which source of biofuel do the students agree is the least environmentally friendly. Mm. So if it's the least environmentally friendly, I guess it's the worst.
The worst one.
For the planet, mm-hmm. yeah. So there are three options, sugarcane, corn, and canola. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what canola is. I've just heard my American relatives say canola. Anyway, let's have a listen. Which is the least environmentally friendly? Sugarcane, corn, or canola? And again, what words did you hear that gave the answer?
Fair enough. So, the main plants that are used for biofuel production now are sugarcane, corn,
and canola. Of all of them, canola is probably the least harmful because machines that use it don't produce as much carbon monoxide.
Sugarcane seems to be controversial. It doesn't require as much fertilizer as corn does to grow. But when they burn the sugarcane fields, that releases loads of greenhouse gases.
Yes, but some critics have suggested that the production of corn ethanol uses up more fossil fuel energy than the biofuel energy it eventually produces. For that reason, I'd say it was more harmful to the environment.
I see what you mean. You're probably right. It's interesting how everyone saw...
Right, so which one was the least environmentally friendly?
It was corn.
It was corn. Mm-hmm. How did they tell us that?
Oh, what a carry-on. It was so they started talking about canola first.
Uh-huh.
And they said that it was the least harmful to the environment, mm-hmm. which means it's the most environmentally friendly.
Exactly. Least harmful means most environmentally yeah. friendly. So they use that word least, but it's not the answer.
It's the opposite, basically, yeah. Then they spoke about sugarcane, it's controversial, some problems with it, some good things. Then they moved on to corn.
Yeah.
And she said, for that reason, I would say it was more harmful to the environment.
Exactly.
So it's the least environmentally friendly. And because this was an agree question, Mike said, I see what you mean. You're probably right.
Oh, yeah, mate. I'm agreeing with you there.
With his little exactly. confirmation. Two confirmations, actually.
So lots of confirmation. But again, your brain has got to juggle.
Mm-hmm.
Least environmentally friendly means bad, bad, mm-hmm. bad, harmful for the environment. Mm-hmm. So the answer mm-hmm. is corn. Mm-hmm. We do this on our intensive listening course, and mm-hmm. I have to say we get a lot of really strong students, a lot of students who need an 8, right?
Yeah.
So you know they're doing really well, they're only making 3 or 4 mistakes, and that question almost always catches
them out. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know it's going to, so that's why I really want to draw attention to this. Now actually, Nick, what I'm thinking is I've got another set of questions mm-hmm. which are playing with opposites,
right?
However, mm-hmm. these are doing it not by using opposite sort of adjectives. So sort of, you know, like recent, old-fashioned, mm-hmm. or quantifiers, more and less. Mm-hmm. They're doing it by using a particular type of grammar structure.
Yeah.
But we're already at 35 minutes. Mm-hmm. So should we use this? Should we deep dive into this version of the trick next week?
We can do if that's what you want to.
Yeah, and then we can maybe even have a little grammar lesson.
Ooh.
Or review grammar lesson on conditionals.
Oh, we should. We haven't done that for a long time.
Exactly. So I think we'll pause here. Or what? We won't say pause. We say we will decide not to continue now. And we won't work for a week. And then we will not come back next week to not pause. I'm sure that's very clear, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very clear.
Very, very clear. All right. But why don't you, while you're practicing this week, you know, if you're doing, and they tend to appear in multiple choice questions. Not always. They can also appear in box matching questions as well. But if you're listening and you hear one of these negative questions, email me with which exam you are practicing and what the question was, what the opposite words were. And then we can maybe just sort of spread it. Because I think the more examples of this that the students see, the better, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Have you got anything you'd like to say, Nick, before we finish?
Don't be upset.
Exactly. So not hello until next week. Take care. Bye.
My IELTS Classroom podcast is a production of My IELTS Classroom Limited. Nick and I do not represent IELTS, and everything you heard in this episode is our own personal opinion. You can find the show notes and transcript for this episode on our blog. That's blog.myieltsclassroom.com. And if you're looking for our video courses, speaking lessons, and marking service, you can find that at www.myieltsclassroom.com. If you have a question or query or just want to chat, you can email Nick and I at hello@myieltsclassroom.com. Our theme music is by Heartbeat, and our artwork is produced by David Brown. Have a great week, study hard, and remember, this is my IELTS classroom. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.